Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, a weekly podcast that gives thoughtful people some perspective and insight on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 4th, 2014. Today, we're pleased to be joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well. Very well. Well, this was a pretty impressive week for the quantity of news to discuss. And so we'll try and get to as much as we can, but this allows us to choose the most interesting topic to discuss. And from my perspective, one of the most interesting things that's coming up on the climate front is the People's March on September 21st down in New York City, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess it's worthwhile to review again the context of the Climate March. The United Nations on September 23rd, which is the day or two after the Sunday March that the 350 people are organizing, will host the United Nations Climate Summit. And in that climate summit, a guy named Ban Ki-moon, who is Korean, but he's the Secretary General of the United Nations, who is convening this summit of world leaders, will press for realistic and real commitment to reducing greenhouse gas emissions in preparation for yet another meeting of the United Nations group in 2015 in Paris, at which they hope to conclude a treaty. And this past week, Dion, I don't know if you saw it, but Ban Ki-moon had a editorial or a post in the Huffington Post to discuss what's at stake in the in this climate summit. Did you get a chance to see that?
Yes, it was a great piece in which Ban Ki-moon noted that you know he has traveled the world and he's seen the impacts of human caused climate change, and basically made the point that if we don't act now, somewhere along the line, very shortly, we're going to hit the point of no return, and this is the point behind the climate summit scheduled for September the 23rd, and it was a very, very compelling piece. Sadly, it appears that it was not read by some representatives from a couple of nations, because it was reported on September the 4th via Bloomberg News that representatives from India and China plan to skip the climate summit. Apparently, they don't think it's going to be terribly productive, even though China is suggesting that, just because they're skipping the summit doesn't mean that they don't care. There were reports earlier this week in Reuters that China plans to implement essentially their own version of cap and trade in 2016. So I guess China feels that, we can take action, we just don't need to talk about taking action. So it's very disturbing that, despite the impassioned argument of Ban Ki-moon, it seems not to have reached the leaders of India and China to at least, show up and discuss this. The old Woody Allen line, 90% of life is showing up.
Well, I it's an interesting development, because the reports and the statements we've heard is that President Obama himself will attend this summit, which of course is a real mark that he takes it seriously. And I hope, quite honestly, I hope that he continues to plan to attend, even in the absence of these two other guys, when there's Xi and Modi from mm-hmm. India, in a sense to embarrass them and to demonstrate mm-hmm. America's commitment. I think that's what it takes. Mm-hmm. And so I certainly, I don't know, if you live in China, please send Mr. Xi a letter. I'm not sure it's going to help, but certainly you can send Obama a letter to remind him how important it is to us as American citizens to that he attend this and make realistic commitments. So, Well, I guess the but in terms of preparation, there was a report that I saw that people from Vermont, that there were buses from Vermont of people who had been victims of Hurricane Irene were planning to make a trip and a statement down in New York City. Did you see that?
Yes, there was a report in the Vermont Times Argus newspaper discussing that apparently 400 Vermont residents, many of whom were severely impacted by Hurricane Irene, are planning to attend the People's Climate March. The story notes that the mobilization of marchers is being led by a host of activist groups, including 350 Vermont, and they're getting support from the Ben and Jerry's organization. They've reserved 10 buses to shuttle people to New York for the march. And the story notes that there are a number of story notes the people who are planning to attend, who basically saw the severe and vicious impact that Hurricane Irene had on Vermont. We all remember the images of roads literally being torn up as if they had been just sort of, decimated in some sort of, post-apocalyptic war. And basically saying that, hey, we know this stuff is real. We know that human activity, the burning of fossil fuels, is causing it. And to protect essentially what's left of Vermont after Irene, it's time for us to do something about cutting carbon pollution.
Well, it's funny that Irene has almost receded in most people's minds, certainly not the people in Vermont, but Hurricane Sandy is now the iconic global warming hurricane, right? And it was Katrina, and then there was Irene, and then there's Sandy. We ought to keep our hurricanes straight and remember the sequence of these violent storms, right?
Exactly, and it's a very it's a physical show of force and a sort of reminder for people who are attending from all around the world that there are plenty of people who saw firsthand the power of carbon pollution and who can say that this is real. This for anybody who dismisses or anybody who argues that this is going to cost too much to reduce carbon pollution, these people are going to show up and say, no, it costs too much not to reduce it.
Well, speaking of seeing that that firsthand, it turns out that the 350 people are releasing a movie called Disruption, and of course, it will be premiered on September 7th, which is this coming Sunday. I have, of course, I saw the trailer. I have not seen the movie itself because it hasn't been released, but. There are watching parties being developed around the country. So if you want, go check online. It's watchdisruption.com on the internet, and you can find out where a party near you is, and you can tell us what you think of the movie, right? And I'm sure it's a heartfelt call to action.
And it's interesting that September 7th is also the day that the Years of Living Dangerously miniseries is being released on DVD, so people can have an all-day sort of a film festival of sorts. They can watch the Years of Living Dangerously DVD, and then they can watch Disruption.
They can watch it binge style, right?
Exactly.
Climate binge watching.
Exactly.
Well, tell me, DR, we were speaking earlier of the, let's see, let's rewind people back to the protests in D.C. where many people chained themselves to the White House fence as a protest against the Keystone XL. And there was one picture that at the time we talked about of a younger woman dressed as a superhero, Captain Planet, I think was, and that woman was, of course, because it was an eye-catching photo, was featured as sort of the face of the protest in much of the media. What's your take on whether or not that might happen in New York City, and how should people be prepared to think about that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a very good question because on the one hand, obviously we all want to respect freedom of expression, and obviously I have no problem with freedom of expression per se. But on the other hand, you always have to think about the irresistible urge that corporate media entities, for want of a better phrase, will have to sort of cast a skeptical or negative eye on people who are protesting entities that are providing the advertising to these corporate media entities. And that was the point I tried to make about the Captain Planet thing, that I think it was seized upon by news organizations that are dependent upon fossil fuel advertising to say, hey, look, look at these crazies, look at these moon bats dressing up in these strange outfits to protest the people who are
this
making our
fanciful thing, right?
Exactly. So it's one of these things where, you know, you do wonder how fair the coverage is going to be, how potentially unfair the coverage is going to be. It was reported earlier this week in Mashable.com that the New York Times is now adding an editor to specifically Adam Bryant, who's specifically going to focus on climate change and environmental issues. It'll be interesting to see if it's covered fairly. I know Bill McKibben did a piece, it may have been, I think, for Huffington Post earlier this year, in which he noted a New York Times science reporter and environmental reporter Coral Davenport's sometimes dubious coverage of these issues. So sometimes you just have to wonder. And let me say for the record, because I know people who express themselves in certain ways, and I'm not specifically trying to bash that. I'm just saying that always think about, you know,
what it's going to look like on the front of the New York Times.
always, you know, the power of footage. I always try to stress the power of footage. Nothing exists in this world unless it's filmed. We've learned that.
Well, you know, I think the other side of that coin is that, so there's two sides to this coin of the media coverage. If you do not get a chance to go to New York City, which I hope you do get a chance, but if you don't get a chance to go to New York City, you should monitor the coverage and demand better coverage from whatever local media you're paying attention to. And the flip side is that if you do go to New York City, you should bring along your cell phone and videotape stuff, right? Because I'm sure that if there is an ocean of realistic coverage on YouTube, which has, you know, amazing power nowadays, that will have some way to counteract the, whether it's deliberate or not. I don't always agree with you, DR, on whether or not there's a conscious defamation of climate people. But certainly if we get realistic video out there, a lot of people are going to see it, even if the mainstream media doesn't pick it up. So,
and by the way, here's a good rule of thumb for people who are, you know, saying, you know who are suspecting that I'm bashing people who want to have a physical representation of the problem. Nothing wrong with somebody dressing up like a polar bear, because it's hard to demonize polar bears. But when people are dressing up as cartoon characters, that's like catnip for demonization by media entities that are dependent on advertising from. I mean, look, hey, New York Times, look at going all the way back to the 1970s, mobile oil advertising on the New York Times op-ed page. These entities are dependent on fossil fuel industry advertising, and hey, it's an irresistible urge to cast opponents of the industry that's paying your bills in a negative light. So
I think
that,
I hope that this, the media struggles to maintain an independent perspective. But it is true, and it is troubling to see how many places the American Natural Gas Association is plugging natural gas. You see it on websites that you would imagine would never consciously accept that kind of money, but they're happy to have an ad there from these guys telling you how many jobs are come from fracking. And
I mean, think about those ads are national, they're in the public, and they're on the radio. It's amazing.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Well, anyway, so there's some thoughts about the New York City event. Specifically here in the Massachusetts area, you should know that there are we got some information that said there's a bus going from Framingham, Massachusetts. Oh, let me find the details. Framingham, Massachusetts, I believe it's leaving at 6 a.m. There's one full bus. They're filling up a second bus. And if you go to the Facebook page, there's a link. It's the UU Mass Action. And you can hop on the bus at Framingham at 6 a.m. The folks from Cape Wind, Cape Cod Downwinders, which of course is originally a nuclear power protest group, but it's the Cape Cod Downwinders, Carbon Free Cape Cod. They are running buses from Harwich, Barnstable, and Yarmouth, I think. Again, now I'm afraid I don't have it in front of me, so I've lost that. But it's again, it's on the Facebook page. You can catch buses from all those places. You get down to New York and back. It's easy to do, if you can, please check it out. I know there are buses leaving from the Providence area, East Providence, Kingston, and Providence Central. That's, of course, in Rhode Island. But there's lots of buses going down. You can find it on the People's March / Transportation page. It goes by state, who is organizing buses from where. All right? So if you can get down to New York, I heartily urge you to get down there. It'll be a great, it's going to be a historic day. So speaking of history, is something else that will transpire this coming week, and that is the trial of the lobster boat blockade guys. And for those of you who have not been listening every week, turns out there are two gentlemen who bought a lobster boat, called it the Henry David T, after Mr. Thoreau, and then they tried to block the delivery of a barge full of coal into a coal-fired power plant in Somerset, Massachusetts. Of course, they're arrested. They're going on trial September 8th and 9th, and they are mounting a necessity defense, which means that they are claiming that they had to break the law to avoid a much greater harm. And turns out, we'll put up a link, you can go. They're inviting people to come to the trial support them in what's coming up. Did you see any of that, DR? What's your thoughts lately about the lobster boat issue?
Yes, there are two great pieces on it. One in the Associated Press discussing the attorneys for the activists Ken Ward and Jay O'Hara, and a tremendous piece by Miles Grant of the National Wildlife Federation, basically saying that there's no rational basis to prosecute these activists. Miles Grant writes, quote, from start to finish, this protest has been met with embarrassing overreaction and waste of taxpayers' money from the local government. How is the public safety enhanced by trying to imprison these activists? Was big coal in danger of scratching its anchor? The only message being sent here is that dissent will not be tolerated, even if the status quo is steering us towards catastrophe. Unquote. And I want listeners to think about this when they hear contrasting arguments and when they hear arguments from the people bashing these activists. Just think about this. If you are in a mall and you see a child in a locked car on a hot day and you know that child is going to die and you smash the window of the car to get the child out, should you be prosecuted for smashing the car window? Just think about that. Just think about it.
Yes, indeed. And that is what the what's going to happen in the Fall River courtroom in a couple of days. Last time we talked, a couple of weeks ago on the show, we talked about the criteria that are legally defined as to how you can get a necessity defense. One of the interesting things is that the court system, of course, does not look happily on being co-opted into a political statement, right? And for good reason. We want the jury system to be very serious and deal with facts, typically facts of a crime and not a political trial. So it turns out that to have this necessity defense, it may be that the judge in the trial in Fall River calls the defense forward and asks them to present the data privately to him. And if he thinks it's plausible, then they get to present it to the full court, the jury, presumably. And if he says, boy, you don't make the cut, you don't satisfy the four criteria, then he can ixnay the whole necessity defense at the very beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that may have happened before, DR. You were saying that happened to Tim DeChristopher?
Yes, that was apparently the circumstances under which Tim DeChristopher's necessity of defense was thrown out. That the judge essentially declared that the necessity of defense was barred because they deemed his civil disobedience to have been an ineffective means of combating the threat he had identified. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in this case. Certainly, as I've said before, the necessity of trying to stop something that was going to result in, quite frankly, death to me is so obvious, and the moral case of what they did being so obvious that it's just,
Well, I guess
and it's a
I,
true
for
bipartisan
my money,
vote,
I guess
basically.
the blog, the Green Miles, Gavin Miles Graham, I'm
Miles
sorry.
Graham, Miles Graham.
I mean, I think he makes a good point, because I know that when I walked down, not walked, I was at outside the power plant when some of these protests were going on, and the police there were really fully ready for the invasion of Normandy. I mean, they had trucks and, command posts and all kinds of things for a relatively small number of people who had vowed to be peaceful. And then you carry it further and say, okay, why is the DA prosecuting these two guys, these two, which, for something that materially affected nothing? That coal got delivered 3 hours late. Right? So why are they going after these guys? And I think that the blog is right. They don't want any dissent. Right? They're happy to have other criminals walk around the street, but they don't want any climate protesters walking around. And that, I think, is a chilling message that we need to take seriously. Right?
It is definitely something to think about that since when is trying to protect public safety and public health a crime?
Right. Well,
I mean, literally, these guys were, in essence, performing CPR. Is it a crime to perform CPR? I mean, think about it.
yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see, and we will certainly try and keep everyone updated on developments, because you hope that something like this has consequences. For example, we are now referring back to the Tim DeChristopher story where he tried to mess up a federal auction of plots for to search for oil on, right? I mean, you build these cases up, and at some point you break through with one of them. So
Exactly.
even if this one doesn't hold up, maybe it will contribute to the next one. But speaking of cases that did hold up, DR, speaking of cases in court that held up in an $18 billion kind of way, it turns out that recently, in the last few hours, a federal judge has decided that British Petroleum is grossly negligent in the operation of the famed Anaconda Gulf oil spill of a couple of years ago. And that they, fascinating thing, that they are liable for some, well, because the judge said it was gross negligence, they're on the hook for $4,600 of penalty per barrel of oil. And the only question is how many barrels of oil get spilled. And of course, who's estimating low and who's estimating high, but they could end up with an $18 billion fine, which ain't hay, as they say, right?
Yeah, it's a BP's conduct was reckless, said the judge. It was federal judge Carl Barbier on a 150 page ruling. And of course, as the New York Times noted, quote, Judge Barbier also ruled that Transocean, the owner of the rig, and Halliburton, the service company that cemented the well, were negligent in the accident. BP put out a statement after the ruling, said it, quote, strongly disagrees with the decision and will immediately appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which is a bit of a concern because the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit does have a reputation of, for want of a better phrase, favoring certain corporate interests, if you will. So something
Yes.
tells me that BP may not end up paying an $18 billion fine, but let's hope they get punished some way, somehow.
Well, I guess even if they were, here's my thought. Even if BP was forced to pay an $18 billion fine, my sense is, and I could be wrong, but my sense is that is probably at most 1 year of annual revenue, and more likely something like 1/4 of a year's annual profit, I should say, for this company. So an $18 billion fine, it's a hit, but it's not the end of the world.
Maybe
And
they
I guess
should.
you look at this kind of terrible activity and you say, okay, why is there not a death penalty for corporations? Right? Why can't we just end BP and let all the people who are invested in it take a bath? And how come nobody who made, no personal human being, no natural human being who made the decisions, why are none of them prosecuted?
I was going to say maybe they should have gone beyond petroleum years ago instead of just using it as an advertising slogan. But you do have a good point that if corporations are people, then shouldn't this corporation be?
Well, that's the bumper sticker I said, I'll believe corporations are people when Texas executes one of them, right?
Yeah.
But even then, it's just the penalty is huge, right? $18 billion is a huge amount of money, and I'm not sure what fraction of the annual income of BP it is, but I think it's not something that's going to put BP out of business. Mm. And so that's one. And then I guess the other question I have, which is sort of floating around in my head, and I don't have an answer for, is the following: if British Petroleum can be held liable for negligence in extracting fossil fuels, right? That's what they did. They didn't follow the rules. They spilled the oil. They did a bad job of extracting the fossil fuels through negligence. Is there not a similar argument that says, once you sell this stuff and you know it's terrible, are you not on the hook for the damage that's caused? That's grossly negligent also. With full knowledge, you're selling a product that is dangerous. And
exactly.
Is there a way to construct a legal case, or does this BP decision lend any precedent to another case where you could, say, have a class action suit? I don't know. Smarter minds than mine have to deal with that. But it seems like there's some hope there that you've recognized the damage that a corporation can do environmentally. Well, that transfers.
Mm. It's very interesting, especially in light of two of the cases that occurred a few years ago, challenging the fossil fuel industries. You know, the damage that it does in terms of emitting carbon and emitting other greenhouse gases. Those two cases were known as Comer versus Murphy Oil, and also Kivalina versus ExxonMobil Corporation, and. In 2012 and 2013, in 2012, the Kivalina case essentially was thrown out by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And in 2013, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the same as Fifth Circuit that will review this BP case, threw out the Comer versus Murphy Oil case. And both cases, the judges ruled, in essence, that this was what's known as a political question. So in other words, saying what the plaintiffs wanted to do, which is some sort of punishment or some sort of way to get these fossil fuel companies not to emit carbon and not to cause more damage, that's something that's essentially under the purview of Congress, of the executive branch and the legislative branch. There was an earlier ruling, not the final Fifth Circuit Court ruling, but there was an earlier ruling in the Comer versus Murphy Oil case in which one of the judges argued that essentially every single corporate entity that burned fossil fuels going all the way back to the Industrial Revolution would have to be held responsible for the damage that was done to the plaintiffs in Comer. The plaintiffs in this case, people were victims of Hurricane Katrina. So it's interesting to see how, even though those two cases failed, whether the BP case, depending on how it plays out, could it give rise to a new round of more successful litigation, essentially trying to hold the fossil fuel industry legally responsible for not pursuing non-carbon-based alternatives and thus continuing to ruin the atmosphere and to ruin the climate and to, again, in effect, cause loss of property, loss of life, loss of health, and loss of the future, essentially?
Yeah. I think that an important point to keep in mind, because it is easy to think that, Henry Ford's Model T, I mean, that carbon that was emitted then is contributing to the pollution today, to global warming today. But the fact is that there was a study recently showing that there's some limited number, I think it's somewhere between 90 and 150 corporate entities, which are either states or companies that are responsible for some huge fraction, 90% of the carbon pollution that has been extracted since we knew about global warming, and that those 90 entities are what are going to be responsible for doubling the amount of carbon in the air over the next 30 or 40 years. And again, I'm not sure you can sue someone for damages that have not happened yet, but I guess that's a weakness in the legal system. But there's certainly identifiable bad guys that today are contributing to the problem, even if George Washington burned coal at Mount Vernon.
And it should also be noted that in that Comer case, one of the judges ruled that the entire concept of the lawsuit of suing the fossil fuel industry was displaced by the Clean Air Act. So in other words, they're saying that it's the legislative branch that has to essentially hold the fossil fuel industry accountable, not the judicial branch. So it's interesting that the Clean Air Act issue was raised there, and because that's sort of the current issue now involving President Obama's efforts to regulate carbon emissions from power plants through the Clean Air Act.
Right. Well, I see by the clock on the wall that we are closing in on our allotted half hour. Let me just say I finally found the notes that I had on where the buses are going and where they're going from. So we have, again, there are buses from two buses going from Framingham, leaving at 6 a.m., costing $25. The link will be in the blog and on the Facebook page, and the Cape Cod Downwinders will be leaving, having buses go from Harwich, Barnstable, and Sagamore, and that will cost $40. So again, and the links to that are on the Facebook page and in the associated blog to this website. The other thing is that, which I failed to mention before, but I wanted to remind people, is that there's a hashtag which represents another idea that even if you cannot get yourself down to New York City, which quite frankly, many people can't, you can still inform Congress. You should write your congressman a letter telling him how important it is to you that climate change be addressed. And we'll put up a link, all courtesy of an Iowa state senator named Rob Hoag, who sent around a link showing that how to find your congressman. No matter where you live in the United States, right? It all pops up. You can find that. You can send him an email telling him how important the climate issue is to you. And the hashtag, the Twitter hashtag, is pound B, letter 4, letter U in the word March. So before you march. That's a Twitter hashtag of people saying that they've contacted their congressman and what they told them. So this march in New York, I hope, is a historic event. If you get a chance to come down, you certainly should. So, let me tell you that you can check out the links to most of what we talked about tonight on the blog that will be associated with this. It's a WordPress blog, and it'll have, as I say, it'll have the links in it. You can find this on Facebook at slash Mass Climate Action. You can listen to us nowadays on your smartphone using Stitcher. And you can always find us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Mass Climate, and you can follow DR at DR Tucker. So we'll close the way that we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thanks for being here, DR.
Sure, no problem.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We're looking forward to seeing you all in New York City in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.